Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 669, titled Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on April 5th of the year 2009. As always, please use the SpitfireList.com website. It is the best source in the world for anti-fascist information. A wealth of information available on that website, including everything I've done, my entire life's professional efforts, 30 years worth of broadcasting is available for download for free on MP3 and in some cases real audio. There's a tremendous amount of printed information. Be aware, if you are only listening to the For the Record program itself, you're missing the greater part of the For the Record experience, to coin a phrase, because I turn each program into an article-length description, and often there is information in the printed descriptions that I did not have time to fit into the broadcast itself. So please use the website. Now, in a sense, we're going to pick up where we left off dealing with sedition in For the Record 668. When one considers just how far down the road to ruin this country has gone, and when one considers the fact that the media don't do their job, the educational system doesn't do its job, and the political establishment, frankly, doesn't do its job for the most part, into that vacuum are going to come people like some of the people we spoke about in Side 1. And the end result, I think, is not only going to be fascism for what's left of the United States, and there may not be much left of it. I suspect the United States is going to go the way of the former Soviet Union. I think it's going to be broken up, barring a sea change, into a number of smaller states. And yeah, the economic system will be fascist, but it'll be something like, you know, the Southwest Missouri Aryan Republic or something like that. There isn't going to be a whole lot left, and that is going to benefit not only America's enemies, but in particular, the crowned heads of Europe, who never went away. And considering some of the political movements that are afoot, just imagine, and considering the sorry state of the economy, just imagine what's going to happen to the stock market and your 401k program when events like the following come to fruition. The following is from the Bangor Daily News. And specifically, this is from the Bangor Daily News of, well, I'll have the exact date, December 10th of 2008. Bangor, of course, is a city in Maine. This is by Walter Griffin of the Bangor Daily News. It's datelined Belfast, Maine, and it reads in part as follows. James G. Cummings, who police say was shot to death by his wife 2 months ago, allegedly had a cache of radioactive materials in his home suitable for building a dirty bomb. According to an FBI field intelligence report from the Washington Regional Threat and Analysis Center posted online by WikiLeaks, an organization that posts leaked documents, an investigation into the case revealed that radioactive materials were removed from Cummings' home after his shooting death on December 9th. The report posted on the WikiLeaks website states that, quote, on December 9th, 2008, radiological dispersal device components and literature and radioactive materials were discovered at the main residence of an identified deceased person, James Cummings. The section referring to Cummings can be read, and I'll have the link in the description. Continuing, it says that 4 1-gallon containers of 35% hydrogen peroxide, uranium, thorium, lithium metal, thermite, aluminum powder, beryllium, boron, black iron oxide, and magnesium ribbon were found in the home. Also found was literature on how to build, quote, dirty bombs, unquote, and information about cesium-137, strontium-90, and cobalt-60, all radioactive materials. The FBI report also stated that there was evidence linking James Cummings to white supremacist groups. This would seem to confirm observations by local tradesmen who worked at the Cummings home that he was an ardent admirer of Adolf Hitler and had a collection of Nazi memorabilia around the house, including a prominently displayed flag with swastika. Cummings claimed to have pieces of Hitler's personal silverware and place settings, painter Mike Robbins said a few days after the shooting. Well, I think to a large extent this article speaks for itself. Eventually, one of these things is going to go off, a dirty bomb or maybe even some sort of hijacked nuclear weapon. Just imagine what's going to happen to your 401k program then, folks. If you don't think this is going to affect you, even if you're not downwind from it or in the immediate blast radius of something like this. One of the things that comes to mind, and one of the things that I think people need to, it's a point that I can't stress strongly enough, and that is the networking between elements, Nazi elements, such as Mr. Cummings was apparently associated with, and Islamic fascist elements as well. When I talk about the Muslim Brotherhood, one can only properly understand the Muslim Brotherhood as part of the Fascist International. The Muslim Brotherhood dates back to the pre-World War II period. It was aligned with the Axis in World War II, and they have networked with Nazi and fascist elements around the world. Very strong links with German Nazi elements. I would refer people to, for the record, 343 in that regard. Very strong links to Italian fascist elements as well. For the record, 377, talking about that. A compendium on Nazi and fascist links to September 11th can be found in, for the record, 456. But again, one can only understand the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamic fascist groups as what they are, which is part of the Fascist International. Indeed, if one wishes to turn the world fascist, and there are very powerful elements that are moving in that direction and whose desire that is, you can only do it if you're going to have Muslim fascists, because a little over a sixth of the world's population is Muslim, including people who control the fossil fuels of this country. So if you want a fascist world, you've got to have Muslim fascists. And indeed, in what is arguably the greatest achievement, not great in sense of good, but great in terms of spectacular and effective, September 11th, it wasn't just Muslim fascists, but so-called neo-Nazis were deeply involved with that event, as, of course, were fascist elements within the Bush administration itself. And those fascist elements were deeply complicit with September 11th. For the record, 454, the war president in action goes into that. One of the things that I find real scary about this article here, not even beyond what it goes into on its surface, is that President Ahmadinejad and the mullahs of Iran held a Holocaust denial conference in December of 2006, at which they were networking with neo-Nazi and neo-fascist elements. Indeed, there are indications that the Iranian regime is networking with European neo-Nazi and neo-fascist elements. And a couple of the key attendees at that conference were not only David Duke, who was a mentor to Don Black, who runs the Stormfront website, and who developed the leaderless resistance strategy, to which I alluded in, for the record, 668, but also a German Nazi lawyer named Jürgen Rieger. Jürgen Rieger developed the concept of Nazi and fascist elements developing what he called specialized knowledge and abilities in order to further and advance the Nazi and fascist cause. And by that, he meant acquiring military and law enforcement skills and infiltrating the military and law enforcement establishments of various countries in order ultimately to bring about a fascist and or Nazi, well, not a fascist slash Nazi coup, depending on the country. Recall that networking between the mullahs in Iran and Nazi elements is nothing new. Ayatollah Khomeini himself was inspired not only by Nazi Germany, but he was associated with a Shiite Muslim Brotherhood offshoot called the Disciples of Islam, and his exile in France was financed by none other than François Genoux, who was the founder, according to European money laundering expert Ernest Bacchus, of the Bank al-Taqwa. François Genoux, heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And ultimately, by the way, the notion that Iran is not, that they're pursuing nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, basically only certain PR people in this country take that seriously. They, according to John Loftus, with whom I spoke, the actual report that von von Diepen, who crafted that intelligence estimate, national intelligence estimate, that Iran was not seeking the bomb, that basically was a misinterpretation of the actual information fed to him. And I've observed, of course, who is von von Diepen? Nice Anglo-Saxon name that. Basically, none of the world's intelligence services really take that seriously. The question, of course, is what can be done about it? And barring perhaps pressure from Russia, precious bloody little. I don't think that a military strike is likely to do a whole lot. Certainly, I don't think Israel has the capability of doing it by themselves. And given the field intelligence that apparently Iran's nuclear capability is being spread out to various sites, it's unlikely that surgical strike would be possible under the circumstances. And when one considers that people like David Duke and Jürgen Rieger are networking now, along with other Nazi groups, with the Ahmadinejad regime, and when it has it is developing nuclear energy, ultimately the James Cummings of the world, and that was this fellow shot to death by his wife, who was apparently developing a dirty bomb and who certainly had Nazi ideological orientation, ultimately the specialized knowledge and abilities that Jürgen Rieger was advocating will be very, very specialized and altogether able, i.e., nukes. As I've noted in connection with David Duke networking with Ahmadinejad and company back in December of 06, Dukes and nukes is a very, very bad combination. So take note of this. By the way, there is a For the Record series of several hours in length. I believe it's For the Record 27. I'm operating from memory. It's called Specialized Knowledge and Abilities. You can download and listen to the entire thing from the Spitfire website. Now, in connection with the UNPO, headed up by Karl von Habsburg, heir to the House of Habsburg in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and that fellow's married to Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza, heiress to the Thyssen-Bornemisza fortune, I've noted that they head up, Karl von Habsburg heads up the UNPO, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, which champions the cause of various third world peoples in larger countries. And although it sounds noble, it's actually aimed at breaking up those larger countries in order to subjugate them ultimately. A real key to the orientation of the UNPO is the fact that one of the downtrodden, unrepresented peoples they represent are the Afrikaners, who presided over the apartheid regime in South Africa itself, a direct offshoot of the Third Reich. One of the groups whose independence is championed by the UNPO are the Lakota, the Native American tribes of the Plain States. And the Lakota have very real and very serious grievances. They have been utterly screwed by the United States for a period of many years. However, there are Native American activists who listen to this program. You want to be very careful about aligning with the UNPO and championing Lakota independence. What they really are trying to do, the UNPO, that is to get a lot of Native Americans, specifically Lakota, killed, because they want to be able to discredit and break up the U.S. And they're not really looking for the interests of the Lakota. They want the Lakota to sort of be America's Palestinians, so to speak. One of the things that I've noted, however, is that in the territory that is claimed as an independent state by the Lakota is a tremendous field of oil shale and basically various forms of recoverable oil. It's called the Bakken Formation. And note that this area, claimed by the Lakota as sovereign territory, a claim which is supported by the UNPO, that has a tremendous amount of oil in it. The following is from the U.S. Geological Survey site for April 10th, 2008. The following is Dateline Reston, Virginia. 3 to 4.3 billion barrels of technically recoverable oil assessed in North Dakota and Montana's Bakken Formation, 25 times more than the 1995 estimate. Reads in part, North Dakota and Montana have an estimated 3.0 to 4.3 billion barrels of undiscovered technically recoverable oil in an area known as the Bakken Formation. A U.S. Geological Survey assessment released April 10th shows a 25-fold increase in the amount of oil that can be recovered compared to the agency's 1995 estimate of 151 million barrels of oil. Technically recoverable oil resources are those producible using currently available technology and industry practices. USGS is the only provider of publicly available estimates of undiscovered technically recoverable oil and gas resources. New geologic models applied to the Bakken Formation, advances in drilling and production technologies, and recent oil discoveries have resulted in these substantially larger technically recoverable oil volumes. About 105 million barrels of oil were produced from the Bakken formation by the end of 2007. A number of things to consider in this regard. By the way, I am very much opposed to fossil fuels. However, it is certainly going to be a while before a green technology takes over. And in the meantime, the more we can free ourselves from imported oil, and we get about 30% of our petroleum from abroad, then the better America's trade deficits are going to be, and we can begin perhaps to stanch some of the enormous economic bleeding that has been implemented courtesy of Reaganomics, and then Bush, too, finished off what Reagan started, and he pretty much finished off America, which, in my opinion, is what the Bush administration was charged with doing by their underground Reich masters, as I said in, for the record, 668. Mission accomplished. The engineer wrecked the damn train. But note that the area that has what could help America to ease its trade deficit and wean ourselves from foreign imported oil until green technology takes over is being claimed as sovereign territory by the Lakota and supported by Carl von Habsburg and Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza's UNPO. The UNPO and other secessionist movements include the Alaskan Independence Party. They are linked to the UNPO, and many of the domestic American secessionist movements, including the Neo-Confederate movement and the Alaskan Independence Party, for which Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin was a cat's paw, or is a cat's paw, I should say, note that basically they are looking to break up the United States. And don't forget that among the areas in the United States that is producing a lot of oil right now is, ta-da, Alaska. So in terms of beggaring the United States in preparation for literally breaking it up, consider not only the fact that the UNPO are supporting Lakota independence, but that the Lakota's territory includes the Bakken Oil Formation, and that among the secessionist movements in the United States, although associated with the Neo-Confederate movement and the Aryan Nations, is the Alaskan Independence Party, and Sarah Palin is a cat's party for that. By the way, of course, anybody listening to this program for any length of time knows that I've been worried about the coming of fascism to America for a long time. At some point in the not-too-distant future, I'm going to do a fireside chat, because what's coming, certainly fascism, I would argue it's basically here. And I think Barack Obama's attempting to sort of fight a rearguard action. I hope he's successful. I'm not overly optimistic. If the economy continues to go south, it's done for. But what is coming, and of course, if somebody like James Cummings or somebody else with a dirty bomb or a nuke is able to set it off in Washington or New York or some other place, kiss it goodbye, folks. And in that regard, I would read the two National Vanguard novels, The Turner Diaries and Serpent's Walk, both of which involve Nazi takeovers of the U.S. after programs of terror using weapons of mass destruction destroy much of the infrastructure of the United States. And then the Nazis take over. What is coming, in my opinion, is even beyond the coming of fascism to America. What is coming is nothing less than the rollback of the Enlightenment itself. And more about that in a fireside chat in the not-too-distant future. But if you want to roll back the Enlightenment, you've got to get rid of the United States. And there are people working very hard to do that. I've spoken in the past about the resuscitation of the Fischer-Tropsch process, in which you can, among other things, derive gasoline and diesel fuel from coal. More about that. This is from the Wired.com blog. It's called Bad News, Scientists Make Cheap Gas from Coal. It's by Alexis Madrigal. Reads in part, electric cars have been getting a lot of buzz lately, but a more immediately viable transportation fuel of the future could be liquid derived from coal. Scientists have devised a new way to transform coal into gas for your car using far less energy than the current process. The advance makes scaling up the environmentally unfriendly fuel more economical than greener alternatives. If oil prices rise again, adoption of the new coal-to-liquid technology reported this week in Science could undercut adoption of electric vehicles or next-generation biofuels. And that's bad news for the fight against climate change. The new process could cut the energy cost of producing the fuel by 20% just by rejiggering the intermediate chemical steps, said co-author Ben Glasser of the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. But coal-derived fuel could produce as much as twice as much CO2 as traditional petroleum fuels, and at best will emit at least as much of the greenhouse gas. And there are people working to use fissiotropes and recycle the CO2 into algae that in turn would help to produce fuel. In a number of programs, I've spoken about the resuscitation of the fissiotropes process and the fulfillment of a prediction I made in For the Record 385 that the novel The Formula would eventually, which I believe was based on fact, would eventually prove to be fact, and that a catalyst would be developed to make the fissiotropes process much more efficient and competitive with naturally produced oil. And indeed, just such a catalyst has come to light, as discussed in a number of programs, and there will be links to those broadcasts in the description for the Record 669. The origins of the fissiotropes process are discussed as follows. The Nazis used the so-called fissiotropes process to provide up to half of their transportation fuel needs during World War II. Later, South Africa began a major coal-to-liquids program during the apartheid era, and now maintain the world's largest CTL industry in the world. I would note that the Standard IG agreement is discussed in a number of programs, including Miscellaneous Archive Show number 11. Note, too, that in the Road to Lugano Part 2, For the Record 506, I took note of the fact that not only did ThyssenKrupp, that's Thyssen as in Thyssen Bornemisza, married to Carl von Habsburg, get a hold of the old Leuna facility in what used to be East Germany. That was IG Farben's largest synthetic oil refinery during World War II. It was rebuilt by the Soviets after World War II and was operating in the former East Germany, but also that the peak oil disinformation, maintaining, yes, we're running out of oil, and therefore, of course, we have to do all kinds of things like get rid of people with disabilities, cast aside all environmental restrictions so that we can get all of the oil we need, and various other wonderful things, that the peak oil theory has its origins with HIS Energy Consultants Incorporated, a wholly owned subsidiary of Thyssen-Bornemisza Industries. That's Thyssen-Bornemisza as in Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza, married to Carl von Habsburg, who supports the Lakota's independence, thereby depriving the U.S. of the Bakken oil field, and that is also connected to the Alaskan independence movement of Sarah Palin, and that, of course, would split off the Alaskan oil for domestic consumption as well. So note how the pieces of this puzzle fit together. Treason, by the way, is not just being practiced by so-called populist fascists. It has been practiced by members of the elite. Another update, and we've spoken about this in the past, this comes from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, December 5th of 2008, AP story by Kelly Shannon. This is treason, LBJ said of Nixon's associates. What this alludes to is the fact that the Nixon campaign in 1968 interceded with the then government of South Vietnam in order to frustrate peace talks with the North. LBJ was basically hoping to initiate a peace process, which would have enabled him to extricate his administration from the Vietnam War and perhaps win the 1968 election. It was not to be. This article reads in part, "In the last months of his administration, President Lyndon Johnson voiced worry over the Vietnam peace talks and stridently suggested that associates of Richard Nixon were attempting to keep South Vietnam away from the table until after the 1968 election, recordings of telephone conversations released Thursday show. This is treason, Johnson said, referring to people close to Nixon during a conversation with Senate Republican leader Everett Dirksen. The Democratic president never accused the Republican who would succeed him of treason, but said, quote, if Nixon keeps the South Vietnamese away from the peace conference, well, that's going to be his responsibility, unquote. Yeah, well, he was right. Nixon was doing that, and that was business as usual for Richard Nixon, who headed up the Crusade for Freedom, which incorporated Nazi war criminals and Central and Eastern European fascists into the Republican Party. Same Richard Nixon who was involved in the assassinations of both Kennedy brothers as well. And Nixon was nothing if not a traitor. And one of the things that is enabling the sort of populist fascist elements that I spoke about in part one of this, or in For the Record 668, which preceded this program, is the fact that, yes, the major news media do lie about a number of different things. And one of the things they've lied about is AIDS. I've done a tremendous amount of work on AIDS, and there is very strong evidence that it was deliberately created. The most recent program that I did in that regard was for the record 606, also for the record 644, touched on the man-made nature of AIDS, in which we spoke with Ed Haslam, the author of Dr. Mary's Monkey. AFA program number 16 is a massive broadcast and the first program I did in that regard. Recall that during the primary campaign, Reverend Wright, who was the former pastor of Barack Obama, was opining that the government manufactured AIDS. Well, yeah, the government or elements thereof were involved in manufacturing AIDS. Evidence suggests that the boilerplate research goes all the way back to Nazi Germany. One of the things that is most curious about AIDS are the clocks, the rate at which the organism appears to have genetically mutated it. They don't make sense with AIDS, but sure enough, with Reverend Wright being in the news and saying that, the official media, which do, lie, had to do something about that. And what they did can be found in the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, October 2nd of 2008. AP story by Malcolm Ritter. It's called Analysis Finds Evidence of HIV a Century Ago. And this, by the way, is just a flat-out lie. The AIDS virus has been circulating among people for about 100 years, decades longer than scientists have thought, a new study suggests. Genetic analysis pushes the estimated origin of HIV back to between 1884 and 1924, with more focused estimate at 1908. This is pure drivel, and I'm going to have to telescope this in the interest of time. If a disease as lethal as AIDS, and basically if you get it, there is a genetic immunity to it, which is present not only in only the white race, but only purebred Northern Europeans, or quote, Aryans, unquote, a cue to who made it, by the way. But if a disease as lethal as AIDS had been present in Africa or anywhere else in the Third World, where it is devastating entire segments of the population now, it would have been only too evident. For one thing, people in those areas already had their immune systems compromised by inadequate medical care, bad diet, other systemic infections and parasites, and AIDS would have done what it has bloody well done, which is to devastate entire populations. And, well, in AFA 16, we interview, among others, Dr. Jordan and his discussion of the epidemiology of AIDS as well. Two more very quick articles. A European neo-fascist has bit the dust. That was Jörg Haider, about whom I've spoken at great length. He died in an automobile accident, and The Sun, a British daily, had an article on October 17th of 2008 by Brian Flynn. Limo Nazi, quote, murder, unquote, probed. Reading very quickly, neo-Nazi leader Jörg Haider may have been murdered, it was claimed last night. Investigators say the Austrian far-right leader was nearly four times the booze limit and traveling at more than twice the permitted speed when he lost control at 88 miles per hour last Saturday. But the makers of his Volkswagen Phaeton limo insist the motor is one of the safest in the world and should have survived the crash in Klagenfurt. And the suggestion is that he was murdered and that his vehicle was sabotaged. Going to conclude with a look at another European neo-fascist organization, the NPD, the leading German neo-Nazi party, linked, by the way, through Ahmed Huber and others, to the Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, one can only understand the Muslim Brotherhood as part of the Fascist International. This is from the Daily Telegraph. It's called Neo-Nazis Plotting Fourth Reich in Germany. It's by Alan Hall in Berlin. A fellow named Uwe Luthart was a senior member of the NPD but has defected, and he discussed information about the NPD, and I'm going to conclude with this detail. Quote, I joined because I wanted to do something for Germany. I wasn't interested in a greater Germany, and suddenly everyone was saying, we'll take back Silesia and Poland, and then we'll give the communists a thrashing, unquote. Note the following. Luthart said, old Nazis living in South America still donate to the party, and other funds come from the staging of skinhead music concerts. He went on, the simple aim is the restoration of the Reich, in which a new stormtrooper organization takes revenge on anyone who disagrees with them. Huh. Saying here, old Nazis living in South America are still funding European neo-Nazis. Well, gosh, I wonder who that might be. Of course, I'm being facetious. Every once in a while, the Bormann Network, of which I speak so often, does come to light, and this is one of those. However, we are out of time. More in the description for 669, but this concludes, for the record, 669 Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, being recorded on April 5th of 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.